Welcome to the History Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Thomason. The History Podcast is an educational podcast intended to engage student and lifelong learning in American history. Without further delay, let's get to it. Welcome to the podcast. Oftentimes when we study slave rebellions that took place in American history, we tend to look at the time between the American Revolution and the American Civil War, when slaves used slowdowns and the breaking of equipment to resist their masters. It's also the period where we remember the famous runaways who did not only escape to attain their own freedom, but rescued others from bondage. However, there was a major slave rebellion that took place a few decades before American independence was declared, which will be our topic of discussion today. In early September of 1739, along the Stono River, dozens of enslaved African men went on a campaign in which blood was shed in a violent attempt to gain their freedom. What led to this rebellion? What can this rebellion tell us about slavery in the United States, the South, and specifically in this case study, South Carolina colony? Today, we are going to discuss the Stono Rebellion, which is one of the most violent slave revolts in the 18th century. In South Carolina, slavery was the bedrock of the economic system. Cultivating rice and indigo was extremely difficult work. It was physically demanding on the body. South Carolina planters usually had large plantations of a couple hundred acres, which were used to grow rice and indigo. But cultivating rice and indigo, especially rice, was tough on the soil. It sapped the ground of its nutrients. The more affluent planters owned hundreds of slaves, while the poorer farmers had small farms with fewer slaves, but both socioeconomic groups were intent on controlling the slave populations by any means necessary. In the summer of 1739, there was a lot of concern among white planters, not only because of a smallpox epidemic that ravaged the colony the previous year, but also because yellow fever was spreading. The settlers expected a bumper crop of about 35 million pounds for export that year, but the weather was the one variable that was out of their control, especially during hurricane season. Additionally, their greatest trade partner, England, was at war with the Spanish, which had settlers concerned that the port of Charleston might be the site of fighting between the two powers. There were also rumors swirling in the South Carolina colony that the Spanish were trying to entice the slaves in South Carolina and other southern colonies to run away from the colonies and run down to the Spanish-controlled territory of Florida, which we will discuss a little bit later. There was some legitimacy to this claim, as in 1736, 70 slaves from South Carolina traveled by land and water down to Florida for their freedom. Whites in South Carolina also were worried about the increased slave population in the colony over the last several decades and feared that they would eventually be outnumbered, which would lead to slaves revolting against their owners, resulting in their way of life potentially being jeopardized. In fact, 2 years prior, in 1737, South Carolina's colonial assembly passed a law called the Patrol Act, which required white males to police their own slaves. And 2 years later, the year of the revolt, January of 1739, the assembly passed a law that required white males to carry their guns on Sundays. You see, Sundays were the day when whites went to church, and usually the workload for the slaves was lighter. They feared that they may have to defend themselves against the slaves while attending church. Or potentially another reason why this law was passed was that whites in South Carolina feared the Spanish would come in on a Sunday when whites were at church and take their slaves back to Spanish territory. On Sunday, September 9th, 1739, dozens of slaves were led by a slave named Jimmy, who was a recent arrival to the colonies. They broke into a store on the Stono River Bridge, which was about 20 miles southwest of Charleston. The owner of that store, a man by the name of Robert Bathurst, and his associate Mr. Gibbs were both killed by the rebels. The rebels stole guns and other supplies, but what stands out most about this incident is that these men cut off their heads and put them on poles outside the store. Gruesome details. The rebels will move south down the main southern road out of South Carolina. And again, you may be asking yourself, why go south? Wouldn't they want to go north towards a greater likelihood of freedom? Well, they were heading south to get to the Maroon establishment that was in St. Augustine, Florida, which was Spanish territory at the time. They had to move south along the Georgia coastline, evading whites who might be tipped off by such a large group of slaves freely moving without their overseers. But ironically, they weren't in such a big hurry, as you might expect. In fact, along the way, they broke into other stores, getting food and supplies they needed on the journey, killing anyone who was deemed a threat to their passage, and more importantly, to their freedom. In fact, the lieutenant governor of South Carolina, a man by the name of Lawrence Bowl, was almost killed by these rebels when he came upon them suddenly. However, the one advantage he did have was that he was on horseback and was able to narrowly escape. Bowl, however, will send out word, sending shockwaves through South Carolina, confirming the fears that white colonists in South Carolina had that the slaves would revolt. It's important to note that some slaves in South Carolina actually tried to fight against the Stono rebels, protecting their slave owners and their plantations. While this was certainly not the norm, it did occur in some cases. A critical mistake for the rebels was that they stopped several times along the way to celebrate, to dance, and to sing. And this will allow the militia to gain ground on them and attack them in the open field. The rebels were able to return fire, but they were far outnumbered, and eventually, the white militia will shoot and kill 14 of them. This led to a scattering of the Stono rebels. Roughly 40 will eventually be captured, questioned, and executed by the militia. They cut off their heads and put them on the mileposts along the way to Charleston to send a message to the other slaves and even pockets of rebels that still existed after the scattering. As the hours went by, the rebels who were scattered and had not been captured began to reorganize as best they could. However, the following day, on the 10th of September, mounted troops captured many of them, leaving only a small group who would flee into the woods, deeper into the woods, where they would be in hiding until a second skirmish occurred about a week later, nearly 30 miles away from the site of the initial rebellion near Jacksonburg Ferry. Still, a very small group of Stono rebels were able to hold out until late into December before they were finally caught. While we don't actually know what happened to Jimmy, there were 25 whites and 65 slaves who were going to be killed because of this rebellion. One of the sad things about periods like this, events like this, is we lack a lot of primary sources for this particular rebellion. It is very limited, and I think, too, that that should be noted. The South Carolina whites were quick to blame the Spanish for the causes of this rebellion, claiming that the Spanish were trying to convince the slaves to come live and work in Spanish territory. This brought a great deal of fear into the colony. The simple truth is, it was far easier to blame a foreign power than to accept blame for the harsh conditions and inhumane treatment they imposed on those who rebelled. After the rebellion, the South Carolina Legislative Assembly began to pass further laws to strip slaves of any rights or freedoms that they may possibly have been given before. They strengthened the Patrol Act by placing state militia in charge of policing the slaves in the colony. No more would it be every white male being responsible. They're going to put the state militia in charge of policing the slaves in the colony. In May of 1740, they passed the Negro Act, which prevented them from growing their own food, they being slaves. Their masters were now required to provide their food. Slaves were prevented from learning how to read, from playing the drums even. They were prevented from meeting in groups. And they were prevented from trying to earn their own money. In the months and years that follow the rebellion, slaves will be incentivized to, for lack of a better word, snitch on their fellow slaves, to tell their white slave owners of potential rebellions or to anyone who was in violation, of the Negro Act. In exchange, slaves turned informants would be given new clothes, larger food rations, or even in the rarest of cases, receive their freedom, as did one African slave by the name of July. This was an effective strategy by white planters, because what it did is it created division among the slave population, making abolition seem almost insurmountable. And it will be for over 125 years. The Stono Rebellion is arguably the most significant slave revolt in the British North American colonies. It unearthed the tensions that continue to build in the southern colonies over the next century. Chattel slavery is a brutal system where human beings are forced against their will, and over time, this forced labor, this brutal treatment will lead to those being mistreated to respond. And they respond in revolt. Unfortunately for slaves, this and other rebellions like it only led to harsher treatment by their owners, causing them to keep a more watchful eye on their every move, seeking to find every possible way to force the slaves into obedience and accepting their condition in life. In just a few short decades, the Declaration of Independence will be written, declaring that all men are created equal. Sadly, ignoring to accept that truth with the African slave. In the years that follow the Stono Rebellion, we will see different strategies employed by slaves to resist the institution of slavery, each having some success, but ultimately ending in more hostile and violent oppression. That's all the time we have for today. We'll see you next time. Thanks for listening to the History Podcast. We would like your feedback, good or bad, so that we can better serve our audience. If you have a question you would like for us to answer in a future podcast or have a topic request, leave that as well. If you haven't already subscribed to the History Podcast, go ahead and do that now so that you'll get notified when new episodes come out. You can find the History Podcast on any of your podcast streaming platforms. The History Podcast is an Anchor FM production.